Penguin Random House Canada presents All the Rage, a partial memoir in two acts and a prologue by Brad Fraser. Read for you by the author. For Brea Murray, Iris Turcotte, Kate Newby, Spencer Shunk, and everyone who lost someone to AIDS. Author's note. This book is a work of memory. It has been acquitted to the best of my recollection, which is freakishly good. Names have been changed in certain cases to forestall possible social or legal repercussions. Many people who have played profound roles in my life are not mentioned herein. Some might be offended, some might be relieved. Either way, we know what we shared, and perhaps those stories will be told another day. This memoir was written with the assistance of the Ontario Arts Council. Prologue, Bastard Born. My mother had been 16 for 3 weeks when I was born in 1959. My father was 18. They'd met at a dance less than a year earlier. They were two sides of the same coin. Wes was the loud, manipulative bully. Sharon was the quiet, passive-aggressive controller. Neither was what the other needed, but they were both what the other wanted. Both had quit school before completing the ninth grade. Wes Fraser was born and raised in Gainford, Alberta, 60 miles west of Edmonton on the way to Jasper. His father, Fred, was a farmer whom the census listed as a half-breed, Scottish and Cree. Fred's mother was a Métis woman who lived in St. Albert, a suburb of Edmonton. She was the last in a long line of Métis women married to Frasers who came to the new country as trappers. Wes's mother, Margaret, the first white woman in the Canadian arm of the Fraser line, was of English descent. Together, Fred and Margaret homesteaded in northern Alberta and had four surviving children. Fred would later replace their sod-roofed dwelling with the four-sided, sun-blackened pine-board house that was the closest thing I knew to a home in my childhood, as we often stayed there or lived in the one-room shack constructed behind the house. My paternal grandparents doted on me as a child, and I loved them both, but particularly Grandpa, who called me Monkey Face and would often take me with him in the truck when he had to run errands. Grandpa collected and sold scrap metal. The yard and fields were littered with dead vehicles and farming equipment he would haul away from other farms. When I was very young, there were horses, cows, pigs, and chickens, but later he got rid of everything but the horses, which were used to take tourists from the nearby town of Seba Beach on trail rides during the summers. The house was without running water and electricity until 1970 and was just far enough off the road not to have a phone. Grandpa considered the extra fee for a connection exorbitant. They cooked on a wood stove and churned their own butter. Water was hand-pumped into buckets and hauled to the house. Heat came from a pot-bellied coal heater, and light was provided by coal oil lamps and candles. There was a smell of animals, outhouses, fresh-baked bread, newly mowed hay, and overturned earth. Children ran wild and screamed as loud as they wanted, as did adults, although usually for other reasons. Some of the best and the worst memories of my early life are contained in that house and the acres of bush, fields, and sloughs around it. My mum, Sharon Briscoe, came from the comparatively cosmopolitan city of Edmonton, Alberta's capital. She was the fifth child in a family that grew over two decades to 11. Sharon's father, Ernie, was a carpenter and then an administrator in the Alberta Carpenters Union for most of his career. His own father had deserted his Jewish wife and children after relocating to Alberta. Sharon's mother, Mary, was from southern Alberta. She was in her teens when her family moved on a horse-drawn wagon to Edmonton, where she was quickly married off to my grandfather. By the time I was born, Sharon's parents resided in the Bonnie Doon neighborhood. Six of their kids were by then married with kids of their own, and only my two slightly older uncles lived with them. Compared with the Fraser's farm, the Briscoe home, a bungalow like any other in a working-class neighborhood, was palatial, and it had running water and an indoor bathroom. I did not feel the same love from these grandparents as I did from my father's side. The Frasers were emotionally volatile, physically tender or violent, and predatorily loving. The Briscoes were self-contained and emotionally distant. Fraser gatherings always ended in physical or emotional violence. Briscoe gatherings ended with relief and no contact. Adding to the requisite teenage drama of an unwanted pregnancy, my father's family despised my mother, and my mother's family despised my father. Before long, they were dating, and Wes was taking her out to the farm on weekends. Given the ignorance and fear of sex that permeated both families, It's no surprise that Sharon was quickly knocked up. Contrary to the custom of the day, my father, for reasons known only to him, did not immediately marry my pregnant mother. Instead, she was shipped off to one of those institutions that existed in the 50s to help young women deal with the stigma and challenges of an unwanted pregnancy. Wes would bring up doubts about my paternity a few times in my later life, planting an always nagging seed of uncertainty in my mind. However, if he'd truly believed I wasn't his son, then why did he marry Sharon and legally adopt me a few months after I was born? They were joined together at Edmonton City Hall and spent their wedding night in sleeping bags on the floor of Sharon's parents' unfinished basement. I slept in a makeshift cradle, probably a milk crate or cardboard box, beside them. I think Mum was deeply affected by her time in that home for unwed mothers. Any unpleasantness that had happened in her earlier life, and in her encounters with other boys and Wes, she hoped would be alleviated through me. I believe even in the womb she meant me to be her savior. From birth she expected me to be the agent of her growth and liberation. I was showered with love and affection. I was told I was special. I was also a male she could finally control. I remember being in the living room of our grandparents' farmhouse. It was just me and an older male cousin, someone my siblings and I were often left with while the adults were out drinking. His pants were open, his hard, pink cock sticking out. "Bradley, come here and suck on this." Always an accommodating child, I did what he asked. It was a fun game, though he said I could never tell anyone about it. Sometimes when we were staying at the farm, he'd slip into bed with me late at night and do things I was too tired to remember. After being protected for decades by his family, who loved nothing more than blaming us children for his victimization, this cousin was finally sent to jail for raping an infant. I was molested by other babysitters throughout my childhood. Not all of them were men. Even if my parents or other adults had suspected any of this, I wouldn't have been able to communicate properly what was happening. They gave me no vocabulary to discuss such things. My parents were not communicators. There was no teaching from them. They had no ability to think critically and were driven only by emotion and instinct. I'd learned it was horrible to be yelled at or smacked, but it was even worse to be subjected to the cold, silent treatment they both resorted to for whatever transgression I'd unwittingly committed. Throughout my life, people have remarked on how perceptive I can be, sometimes bordering on psychic. This is the result of having parents who demand you read their jumbled minds even as a toddler. I would eventually become most adept at it with all kinds of people. Other than the farm and the shack, our lives were lived in an endless succession of rental properties. My father found the cheapest place he could. My mother cleaned it thoroughly, and we resided there for anywhere from a few weeks to a few months before we were inevitably evicted for non-payment of rent. My mother gave birth to three other children. I have two sisters and a brother, all of us just barely 2 years apart. The experiences of my childhood are not necessarily those of my siblings, and their stories are not mine to tell. Wes worked a variety of menial jobs in the early years, and we moved back and forth between Gainford and Edmonton. Then one day when I was 5, I fell asleep in Edmonton and woke to find myself in the main floor suite of a rundown 3-story house, my mother scrubbing the floors and my father off drinking with his buddies. We were now living in Calgary. There, my parents established the pattern for the rest of their marriage. Wes worked out of town from Monday through Friday and came home on weekends. I was playing on the front porch one summer day when I heard a sound I'd never heard before. A kind of scream that didn't sound human but didn't quite sound mechanical either. I looked over the banister. A car with 3 people in the front seat had sped around the corner and had slammed on the brakes before they hit an elderly native woman who was crossing the street. I can vividly remember the look of horror on their faces when the car collided with the woman and she rolled up the hood into the windshield before rolling back into the street with a dull thud. I ran into the house. My parents were drinking in the kitchen with a couple who lived upstairs. I screamed, "Mummy, Daddy, Mummy!" I breathlessly described what I'd seen. They looked at me skeptically. My father said, "You better not be making this up." I pointed to the front door and begged them to go look. All 4 adults moved to the door and saw the woman lying in the street. With exclamations of shock, they all rushed out into the street. I was completely forgotten. I know the elderly woman lived because my father showed me the article in the paper the next day.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?